You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today, Thursday, August 16th, 2018. I want to welcome you to the program. I want to thank you so much for joining me. If I sound like I've got a stuffy and runny nose, and you know, I do. My wife gave it to me. I'm pretty sure. I think it was an intentional weaponized virus that she had that gave it to me. But no, that's all right. It's day number 250, or it's episode number 254, by the way. Day 574 of the Donald Trump presidency and day 457 of this Mueller runaway investigation witch hunt. And I've got a lot to tell you today. People have sent me emails and saying, why, for example, why are you just concentrating on what's known as Spygate or Russiagate, whatever you want to call it? And my answer is simple. Look, it is the biggest story of our lifetimes. This is the deep state. This is the shadow government in action. This is the swamp in action. And this is the what's happening right now. A few events that have taken place over the last couple of days, well, really over the last week, we're learning more about these events. And what this is doing is showing that there is certainly no one with any reasonable sensibilities could possibly deny the existence of a deep state shadow government, rogue element within the government, whatever you want to call it. Their existence, this power cabal, if you will, that are making the decisions, that are making decisions that are constitutionally antithetical and are against our president and against the American people who support him. Whether it is the big tech Silicon groups, or the members of the Department of Justice, FBI, they're all cut from the same cloth, and I believe that they're all taking their marching orders to some extent or another from the same group of individuals. Now, I don't profess to say that there is a super methodical or how can I put this? I don't profess to say that there's this. They're super organized. I just think that they're in contact and they're working in concert with each other. And I would even suspect some don't even consider themselves as part of the deep state, but they are, whether they're tools or witting or unwittingly. But this is taking place right now, and so what we saw since we last spoke. We saw Strzok being fired from the FBI. Now, he was removed last Friday. And, of course, I mentioned this, and he was everything was cut off from him, okay, in terms of, FBI stuff. And, of course, he started a GoFundMe page, and there you have it, and raised a whole ton of money. Let me just say this. I don't get it. For the people who are propping him up, I don't get it. I mean, now don't take this the wrong way. Please don't take this the wrong way. But if it were you or I, in that position, what are these people that are donating? What are they thinking? Yeah, I can't even speak about it. What are they thinking? I mean, we're talking about a guy at the epicenter, the architect of the Russian narrative, the guy who reportedly changed 302s, which are the FBI forms that summary of interview forms, basically. But what are they thinking? Man, if you or I did this, we'd be lucky to get over $10. You know, it's it's a fight anyway. And I've seen this. It's a fight anyway. Although we have some very loyal and generous listeners and people, man, you know, nowhere near in the history of our company have we raised as much as Strzok did in 72 hours or whatever it's been. But I don't want to sound jealous. No, that's not it. I'm just shocked. What, $500,000, I think? I don't know what the exact figure is, but it's up there. Oh, man. You know, anyway. But look, there's news, and there is some news. Now, Dan Bongino yesterday, a very interesting yesterday program, he had talked about Rachel Maddow. And I don't know whether you caught, if you listened to Bongino or not, but he had talked about this cone of silence and that Rachel Maddow was playing, and actually played the Maddow clip. I'm not going to play it. And you might have heard it by now, this cone of silence, as a consequence of George Papadopoulos, the entering of the plea coming up, and his attorney says, "Whoa, hold on a minute. You know, we have reason to believe that there's exculpatory evidence that exists, that especially in light of the Strzok firing," and Mueller clamped down, saying, "We're not going to give any evidence to the defense or to the Papadopoulos team." All right, it's just that simple. Without creating all of them, without going down deeper than that, it's pretty much that simple. And Maddow took it, you know, she's like, "Wow, gee, I wonder what's going on." Well, and Bongino said, "Look, this is what's going on. When you look at what, when you look at the epicenter, how this Spygate narrative, this Russian narrative started, how did it start? Well, it started with, among others, but one of the key people was George Papadopoulos at the periphery of the Donald Trump campaign, named as a volunteer foreign policy volunteer, and being approached by a guy by the name of Joseph Mifsud, which then went to Downer. And I mean, I think pretty much most people know the backstory behind this, so I'm not going to repeat it. But the issue is now, it focuses on Joseph Mifsud. That's where the issue focuses at the moment. Mifsud heretofore was believed to be this Russian operative or a Russian asset, an asset for the Russian government, which created the narrative that, hey, you know, Mifsud, well, without getting into the granular details, which created the Russian narrative. Now, the whole case, or the whole that whole part of the case, rested upon Mifsud's actions and Papadopoulos's actions, consequential to being contacted by Mifsud ultimately. All right, the question here now becomes, what is Mueller hiding? Why does he not want to give any evidence over to the Papadopoulos team? Why is Papadopoulos's team, you know, putting on the brakes so heavily? And I'm really shortening this up. Well, what happens? What would happen if evidence would prove that this Joseph Mifsud was not an asset for the Russians, but an asset of the Western intelligence agency, specifically working under the direction of Brennan, Obama, Hillary Clinton, DNC? What would happen if that would be the case? And it would, certainly Mueller would not want that information to get out. So that would explain the cone of silence. It was a great program that he had, Dan Bongino yesterday. But and I'm just looking over my notes that I've taken over the last couple of days. You know, per the FBI, the origin of the Crossfire Hurricane, it began really at the level of Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos relaying information to Alexander Downer that he got from Joseph Mifsud, if you want to connect some dots there. And Mifsud right now, we don't know where he is, and certainly he hasn't surfaced anywhere. But again, what happens if we find out that Papadopoulos' team found out that MIFS is not working for the Russians at all, but working for us. You've got to remember the fake collusion story really began in April of 2016 with Papadopoulos meeting with MIFSD. And MIFSD, again, the narrative says MIFSD was a Russian operative. But no, let's look at the evidence. MIFSD working actually is, I would suspect, working for Western intelligence, not the Russians. That would totally change the narratives. And by the way, Strzok being fired, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on about his termination. And obviously, everyone is pointing to the biased texts for the reason of the termination of Peter Strzok. Batman. What the media is not telling you, and usual sources of Conservative Treehouse and other locations, it was March 2018, March of this year, when the Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General announced an ongoing review of how the Department of Justice, the FBI, and FISA, they were looking at them as this weaponized tool against political opposition. Well, it was just a couple of months after that. It was on May 21st when Rod Rosenstein added a very significant Department of Justice mandate to the Inspector General review. He expanded the original FISA review to include looking at whether officials within the intelligence community had unlawfully used human intelligence assets to spy or surveil the Donald Trump campaign. Now, folks, remember, if you've listened to this program, and I know I've said this personally to other people, I'm telling you, there was both signals intelligence or surveillance, electronic surveillance on the Donald Trump campaign, but there was also physical surveillance against the Donald Trump campaign and the transition team, and even into the early part of the Donald Trump presidency. I'm telling you this. I know this. I can't tell you how I know this, but I know this. Political opposition research individuals, physical surveillance. This will come out. I guarantee you this will come out. Okay, think of it this way. I'm gonna divert from my non-script here. If you were Donald Trump and you've got, you're using phones, for example, at Trump Tower. Think about cell phones, for example. Do you think that cell phones, it wouldn't matter if you were in Trump Tower or Bedminster, they'd be covered under the signals intelligence. They'd be captured by signals intelligence. So why the move? It wasn't because of the cell phones. Could it be the landlines? Well, the landlines, yeah, sure. But it also could work at the Bedminster. I submit that human intelligence was a factor here. And that's all I'm going to say about that, just to kind of take a left turn there and divert. But when you look at the reasons, for example, getting back to what I was referencing, and I don't mean to jump around here, but this is an extremely important piece of information. Let's get back to Strzok for a moment. The ongoing Inspector General review surrounds the FBI 302s, the affidavits as well. The 302s, which form the basis for the FISA warrant affidavits, which were presented to the FISA court, and those affidavits were, I will say this, fraudulent or based on fraudulent information, misleading the court, or perhaps the court was complicit in that, depending on the judge. When you look at the FISA court, the composition and the mentions about Rudy Contreras being, you know, good friends with Strzok and such, but I digress. The Agent Strzok, he's the guy that's, he's the affiant who swears out or swears to the truthfulness of the information, including that all exculpatory evidence is included in the FISA warrant itself as well. We know that did not happen. Folks, his firing is not about his bias, although his actions are spurred by his spurred along by his bias, but it's not about his bias. It's about his actions that went into the FISA warrant application. We violated the Woods procedures, and Strzok most likely falsified, manipulated, and redid the federal form 302s. Multiple investigative notes in both the Hillary Clinton and Michael Flynn interviews. Now, stay with me until the end, because this is all going to come together, and I believe you're going to see a pattern here. And this does relate to the recent removal of the security clearance from John Brennan. There will be others. Upwards of a half a dozen to even perhaps another dozen where their security clearances will be revoked in very short order. So you've got Strzok, who manipulated the 302s, allegedly. You've got him being at the tip of the spear with respect to the Clinton exoneration investigation. You got him working Michael Flynn. He is everywhere. Like I say, he's Batman. But his firing had nothing to do with really the text. There were little to do with the text. That would be like number 40 on a list if there were 40 reasons. That'd be way down the list. So if you go back in time, if you look at Sundance Conservatory House goes through this as well. Our investigations are parallel with one another. And I'm picking out the high points that he's referenced, and I'm going to add my own. But it was on May 11th, 2018, when Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, dropped this, what he calls a sunlight grenade, in the prosecution of Flynn, with this request letter to FBI Director Wray. And the letter outlines a prior briefing from Comey to the Senate Judiciary Committee. And what this letter does is it contrasts the false presentation of James Comey by extension Peter Strzok regarding the Flynn case against recently disclosed evidence. Now, Grassley had asked for the transcription of the phone calls intercepted by the FBI between Flynn and Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. The FBI 302s, written by the FBI in their interview with Michael Flynn, and testimony from Joe Pienka, FBI Special Agent Joe Pienka, the second FBI agent who partnered with Strzok for the Flynn interview, most likely. Now, at the time, the name Joseph Pienka was really not known. It was there was a lot of speculation out there, but it was not known. And the speculation goes back to the request from both the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and other venues. But just, again, stick with me. Hear me out for this entire interview, because I'm going to wrap this up and tell you exactly what I think is going to happen here. Now, you had the Justice Department refusing to provide any information to the committees, especially the committee pertinent to the Grassley request, citing an ongoing investigation status. However, the senator was outlining his request against the backdrop of the judge in the Flynn case demanding that the special counsel turn over all exculpatory information. And in America, we should never have to ask for exculpatory information. In other words, if if you're being charged with something and there's information favorable to you that exists in the legal venue, the prosecutors are required to give that information to the courts. It's just that simple, period. That's it. Now, I want to bring out, and CTH does a great job of showing this, Judge Rudy Contreras was the presiding judge in the initial guilty plea of Michael Flynn. Now, this is not, remember, Papadopoulos is coming up here. But back then, Contreras, who was friends, is friends with Peter Strzok, and had communications with Strzok, was recused. Now, Judge Sullivan took over and demanded that the Department of Justice turn over all exculpatory evidence. So there's that with Flynn. There's a pattern of behavior here by the top echelon of the FBI and the Department of Justice, and even extending into Mueller. So, all right. Now, I'm not going to get into the article at CTH again, because these are parallel investigations, even with, for example, with what Sean Hannity's putting out and others, are Sarah Carter, John Solomon. They're all parallel investigations. Dan Bongino has got information as well. We're all talking the same, essentially, we're all singing the same note. But the problem, the issue here, where this all is going to, or could very well break down, is the fact that the Papadopoulos incident, the incident that started this whole thing, from Joseph Mifsud, who is missing in action or making himself scarce, is most likely not a Russian operative at all, or at least in this case, was not working on behalf of the Russians, but Mifsud, which started this whole thing with Papadopoulos, was actually working for Western intelligence, specifically John Brennan and other friendlies outside of the United States. So think now, if that's the case, and Papadopoulos' attorney, the attorney's, his legal team says, whoa, wait a minute, we're not going to, before we make a plea or agree to things, we want to see the exculpatory evidence. Mueller then throws this, what Rachel Maddow calls this cone of silence over the whole thing, not understanding the level, and Bongino goes into this, not understanding the depth of what's going on here. She thinks she does, but she's too clever by half, has no clue what she's talking about, or carrying the water for these people. So the bottom line is this. It's real simple. The exculpatory evidence could change the entire Russian narrative, and Mueller, the whole thing with Mueller could fall in upon itself. Which leads me to, of course, the Brennan losing his security clearance. Okay. Hold that thought for a second, because why now? And have you noticed the reaction by Brennan, the guy that looks like he sucked on this pickle for the last 40, 50 years of his life? Okay, President Donald Trump acted on a threat to revoke his security clearance, citing a constitutional responsibility to protect classified information. So understand this. Brennan, who served under Obama, now is spouting off using social media, by the way, not being censored, as well as using the platform that he was given in the mainstream media to, well, look at it this way. If you are working for a news organization and you've got clearance to the unredacted versions of everything through your security clearance, does that not give you a leg up on everyone else? Of course it does. You see the raw data, the raw information. You've got your security clearance. But worse yet, you use that for the team that you're playing for, CNN, MSNBC, whatever that might be. And then you weaponize it. And that is not right. And people are saying, well, the knowledge of John Brennan, he'd be he's an asset to our intelligence community, because if he would be read in on everything or maintained to be read in on everything, well, you know, it's real simple. He could help us with intelligence threats. Well, that's not what he's doing. And everyone knows that, except the disingenuous mopes out there who are saying he died. You know, oh, yeah. No, he's using this as a weapon against the current administration. And I would say even further, on behalf of who? On behalf of certainly the communists, but Obama. Look, Obama figures prominently into this. Obama, Jarrett, and that whole team that's never left Washington figures prominently in this. So look at what happened with Brennan. There was a written statement whereas President Donald Trump cited erratic conduct and behavior. I believe that to be an accurate statement by Obama's CIA director as justification for revoking his security clearance. Donald Trump also accused Brennan of lying in wild outbursts. Now, remember that news conference last month that was in Europe where Donald Trump stood alongside Putin? And he used that opportunity to openly question our intelligence agency's conclusions that Moscow tried to influence the 2016 presidential election. Influence him, the elections in his favor. Remember Brennan's response? Brennan sharply criticized Donald Trump's performance as treasonous. That's a hell of a word to throw around against a sitting president. Think about that for a second. Is this... He also, yesterday when his security clearance was revoked, this is this is a Twitter response by Brennan. And I've got the tweet up here right now. This action is part of a broader effort by Mr. Trump to suppress freedom of speech and punish critics. It should gravely worry all Americans, including intelligence professionals, about the cost of speaking out. My principles are worth far more than the clearances. I will not relent. Well, okay. Okay. Seriously? Suppress freedom of speech? No one is suppressing your freedom of speech. If you say... No, they're suppressing you, weaponizing intelligence that is should be made available to only those using it to defend the United States, not to take down a president. So this is a straw man argument. But there's more. There's talk right now, and I don't know how many people are following this, the security clearances of another half a dozen to maybe a dozen or even more are at risk, including James Clapper, DNI, under Obama. James Comey, who was fired, of course, in May of 2017 over the Russian investigation. Now, if you look yesterday, what Comey tweeted out, and if you don't think that there is some level of coordination between these individuals, just look at their open statements. Comey sent a tweet yesterday saying that, once again, this president, meaning Donald Trump, is sending a message that he will punish people who disagree with him and reward those who praise him. In a democracy, hey, Jim. This is our constitutional republic, but in a democracy, security clearances should not be used as pawns in a petty political game to distract voters from even bigger problems. Yeah, you're right, but you're doing just that, James Comey. You also have Michael Hayden on the chopping block, the U.S. intelligence official, former director of the National Security Agency. Sally Yates is another one. Now, Sally Yates, this is interesting for a number of reasons. Here's the deal on Sally Yates. Sally Yates was she was the supervisor over Bruce Orr. Sally Yates specifically, oversaw the Russian investigation and oversaw Bruce Ohr, but Sally Yates signed off on one of the FISA application warrants, warrant applications. And it is my belief, and I have to agree with Dan Bongino on this, the liaison between the Department of Justice, specifically Ohr, and others around him, and Barack Hussein Obama, is in fact Sally Yates. Now, I think that Donald Trump knows this. Now, remember when Yates was fired back early last year, she refused to enforce the new president at that time, President Donald Trump's ban on travel by U.S. residents. Remember the travel ban, which is incorrectly termed, but you remember that. Well, she was fired because she was fired for insubordination. She served with Obama and had agreed to stay on the job under Donald Trump, but she informed the White House that Michael Flynn was potentially compromised. She was the one that ran to Donald Trump and saying, "Hey, Michael Flynn, compromised. He's been in contact with Russian officials." Now, President Trump allowed Michael Flynn to keep his security clearance after Yates' disclosure, but later fired Flynn, citing misstatements he made to Vice President Mike Pence. You know that story. But then Yates became very vocal with respect to the Putin summit. Yates said, "Our president today not only chose a tyrant over his own intel community, he chose Russian interests over the country he has sworn to protect." And then just several months ago, last December, she sent out a tweet saying that the FBI is in tatters. No, the only thing in tatters is the president's respect for the rule of law. That's a tweet by Sally Yates. Okay, again, the weaponization of intelligence, instead of protecting the company, you use it as a weapon against the president of the United States. This is the anatomy of a coup right now. And Susan Rice, of all people, the national security advisor under Obama, on the chopping block, her security clearance is about to be revoked. And look at what she wrote for the New York Times back last month, saying that the United States has so much to lose and so little to gain from the Trump-Putin summit, which was done, saying that, oh, this is odd for a president and such, but I digress. McCabe, of course, former FBI deputy director, he's going to, I can see a criminal indictment in his future, by the way. A criminal referral already, but an indictment. But he's a former FBI director who led the investigation into Clinton's email practices. Jeff Sessions fired McCabe after FBI disciplinary officials in the Justice Department concluded he lied during an IG investigation. Remember, his wife, Jill, ran as a Democrat for the Virginia State Senate back in 2015 and accepted a campaign contribution from a Clinton ally. But McCabe did not become involved in the Clinton probe until after his wife's bid for elected office, which is kind of keeping him safe, if you call it that. And then Peter Strzok being let out of the FBI building last Friday, and officially the announcement of his firing on Monday. And don't you find the timing a little bit interesting? With the revocation of Brennan's security clearance and the timing with respect to the Papadopoulos plea agreement, his attorneys saying, well, full stop, we're not going to do what we're going to do. You know, you're not going to enter a plea. We're not going to engage in any talks. We want to see all the evidence, including the exculpatory evidence. So my question is this, given Strzok's position on this Russian investigation upon firing, what was learned after his departure that was given, what information was learned that was given to Papadopoulos's people following his termination? That is the key story here, because Strzok has been the man behind all of this. It's hard to believe that one guy, although well connected, you know, connected to Comey, connected to Brennan, who also, by the way, has some CIA struck, and so this is going to come out, working as well for this Central Intelligence Agency. I guarantee you, working under Brennan as well, he's not only an FBI agent, but a CIA operative. So Strzok's firing, the timing is critical. People are saying, well, nothing's happening. I don't see any perp walks. Nothing's happening behind, or nothing's happening. We can't see anything. All that's going on is talk. Well, wait, look at what is going on. Strzok was just taken out. You got the top tier of the FBI removed for cause, for good cause. Now you're seeing security clearances revoked. It might not be as quick as you want it to be, but why, for example, why was Strzok fired Friday? Why not 2 Fridays ago? Why this Friday? It is my belief, based on everything I've been researching, is that they got what they needed from him. And from an administrative role, when you are working for the FBI or whatever government agency, they have more control over your... They've got more control over you. Now, you quit, you risk losing your pension, and et cetera. You're fired, of course, when they're done with you. And that's what I believe happened with Strzok. And once he was fired, a lot of this information came out, I think as a consequence of previous interviews, but also of information that was ultimately made available after his firing, that, okay, he's out of the way, his usefulness is gone, and now the information about the exculpatory evidence has come to the team Papadopoulos, and I think things are going to change. And once they do, and remember the name Joseph Mifsud, remember that name, because that's going to come in, just as Bruce and Nellie Orr, Christopher Steele, all these names that you know, remember Mifsud, and remember me saying, and I think Bongino said this as well, I'm not sure, but Mifsud, what if he was working not for Russia or a Russian operative, but for the U.S. intelligence or the Western intelligence agencies? And I think that, given everything that we know right now, that will destroy the Russian narrative. And people like Rachel Maddow and the media will not be able to handle the truth. This is what we're looking at in a nutshell. Oh, by the way, speaking of Strzok, just briefly, you know how tight he was with Lisa Page. Now, if you follow the president's tweets enough, you get kind of a feeling of how what he thinks of things. He's been referring to Lisa Page as the lovely Lisa Page recently. Now, is that sarcasm? I'm not so sure about that. I have a feeling that Lisa Page threw Peter Strzok under the bus, and not just threw him under the bus, got in the bus and drove it over him, and then reversed and drove it over him again, and then went back and forth. That's kind of what I think is going on here. And I think Lisa Page really did a number on Peter Strzok, which would also, the timing would fall into his termination. And also the evidence or the testimony by Page behind closed doors, I'm sure of it, I'm sure, was devastating to Peter Strzok as well as others. And Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr, I've been talking about this before, Bruce Orr having a security clearance. He had contacts, of course, just as a reminder, with Glenn Simpson. Glenn Simpson, of course, hired Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele did an end around and talked to Bruce Orr after being fired by the FBI. I went over this in a previous program. So Bruce Orr is a key figure in this, but so is his wife, Nellie Orr. And Bruce Orr, I'm sure, is on the list for the revocation of security clearances. But now again, remember, Fusion GPS hired Christopher Steele during the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign to compile this dossier of information against Donald Trump and his ties to Russia. Nellie Orr, the number four, or Nellie Orr, Bruce Orr, who is number four at the Department of Justice, Nellie Orr, Bruce's wife, worked for Fusion GPS. I go back to what I said in my last program. Go back to the episode 253. And listen to what I said about the meeting at the Donald Trump Tower, that infamous meeting at Donald Trump Tower. Christopher Steele denied while testifying before Congress that he knew about this meeting at Trump Tower. Yet he attended a meeting with one of the principals, Veselnitskaya, before and after, the day before and the day after that meeting. What'd they talk about? Of course, it strains credulity to believe that Christopher Steele had no knowledge. So he lied, in my view, to Congress. So this is what we're looking at. Now this might sound like really boring stuff. And I get it if it sounds that way. Now, permit me to pull the lens back right now, just briefly. And just consider this. What we're talking about are the principals, the people involved in an attempt to overthrow a duly elected president, but before that, keeping him out of office. And when you start a post-mortem at this point, and we can do that basically because we've got a lot of information that's already known, so we can do, metaphorically speaking, this post-mortem of what happened. It all goes... Let's go back to the Trump Tower meeting. Because I mentioned Bruce Orr, I mentioned Christopher Steele, I mentioned the other people, but this is so important. And I referenced in the last episode, I referenced that Real Clear Investigations piece where 2016 Trump Tower meeting looks increasingly like a setup by Russia, by Russian and Clinton operatives. You can go back to this is a piece by Lee Smith. You can go back to episode 253, I believe it is, and catch the link there, get the link there. But the bottom line is this. The 2016 meeting at Trump Tower was a defining moment. That was a setup from start to finish. And that meeting involved Christopher Steele, but it connects. It involves Fusion GPS, Christopher Steele sending out Veselnitskaya and Akhmetshin, which is a name that you haven't heard before. It's not bounced around too much. Kind of hard to say. Oleg Deripaska as well. But the meeting itself served as a catalyst, as a sting operation. That's what this is. That's another part of this. This meeting, once fully worked out from an investigative perspective, will show the connections to Steele, Fusion GPS, Bruce Orr, and will really lay out all of the parties who are attempting and have been attempting to take down or to keep Donald Trump out of the presidency, and to make it appear as though Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians, or that, or even worse, that there was some sort of ill-gotten gain by Donald Trump for some consideration at this meeting, which never happened, which did not happen. And the question becomes as well, wait a minute. Isn't it bad enough that Donald Trump Jr. accepted this meeting at Trump Tower with the intent, maybe, gain dirt on Hillary Clinton? No, it happens all the time in political oppositions, the political campaign oppositions. So I know I've kind of gone all over the place here, but when you look at everything in a when you kind of pull the lens back and look at everything, you can see how this is all playing out. So in summary here, with respect to this, what I'm referring to, the operation against Donald Trump, I just want to make sure that people understand the fake collusion narrative began in April of 2016 when George Papadopoulos met with Mifsud. Now, Mifsud, known as the Maltese professor, his name is going to come up. We don't know where he is, or he's not making himself available. And Mifsud is reportedly this Russian operative or working for the Russians. And he's the one that approached George Papadopoulos and said, hey, and the whole narrative surrounds Mifsud working with the Russians. But new information. is the fact that MIFSET is most likely working for or did work for Western Intelligence, that being John Brennan specifically, and was a really major, played a very major role, really got the ball rolling for the Russian collusion narrative. So, and then from that, it built into the Trump Tower meeting on June 9th, 2017, or 2016, I'm sorry, and involved others, including but not limited to Oleg Deripaska. Again, I went over this in my last episode. So when you look at all of this in kind of a wide-angle lens, the fact that the Department of Justice and the FBI, but specifically the Department of Justice collaboration with Clinton-paid researchers in efforts to connect the Donald Trump campaign to Russia, when in fact it was her campaign that was connected to Russia, the Russian agents and operatives. It supposedly came together, against Donald Trump on June 9th, 2016 at Trump Tower. But wait, no. No, it did not. And again, Simpson saying, I had no knowledge, yet met the principals, the Veselnitskaya and others, Akhmeshin, before and after that meeting. So this puts Glenn Simpson in a position, working with Hillary Clinton and the DNC, and also Glenn Simpson working with Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr. This shows, without any shadow of a doubt, the fact that these people are dirty, in my view, and they're part of an operation to take down, even today, to take down Donald Trump. And we can see this playing out with the announcement of the Brennan security clearance revocation. We can see it playing out now with in our favor now with the Papadopoulos putting the brakes on any kind of continued plea, asking for exculpatory evidence, which, by the way, remember the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, one of the most, in my view, one of the most corrupt in committees in Congress, the James Wolf, working as the top security guy for that committee for 30 years, he's the guy, after bedding down with, or maybe as a consequence of bedding down with Ali Watkins, sent an 82 texts, sequential texts, which matches the number of pages in the FISA warrant application, the fourth FISA warrant application, meaning that if there are 82 pages of the FISA warrant application, and let's say five are nothing but blank black lines or black boxes, would you send those as texts? Would you send that? Of course you wouldn't. No. You would skip those pages. So it's my belief, as well as others I've heard, that the FISA warrant application, the fourth FISA warrant application, was unredacted, given to the media via Ali Watkins from James Wolf, from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, which also tells me that you've got some bad people working within the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, headed by, or on the minority side, headed by Feinstein, and on the majority side, Warner and Burr. Warner, to be precise, or Warner on the Democratic side, but you get the idea, the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So what I'm saying to you, and this brings me forward to another important point, the reason Donald Trump is sending out the tweets that he's sending out and also talking about fake news and taking the media to task is very simple. He knows what the opposition has. He knows that there has been a breach in security. And I believe he knows, and I would say this, there will be more to come out about Brennan, about his role in all of this in the near term. Because the revocation of the security clearance of John Brennan came at a time after Strzok's removal, and came at a time during a very important process with George Papadopoulos, and Mueller's refusal to turn over any kind of evidence, including exculpatory evidence, to Papadopoulos' team. So what I'm saying to you is, basically all hell's about to break loose. And people are saying, well, nothing's happening. Well, yeah, a lot's happening. Tons of things are happening behind the scenes. This is where we're at today. Wow. I mean, it cannot get any more clear than this. And whether or not we're going to see perp walks of Clinton, Hillary, or whatever, I don't know. But most assuredly, when people are, and I think when before this is all said and done, you're going to have people turning on others, including and especially Bruce Orr, because people are asking, well, why is Bruce Orr still working at the Department of Justice? Because he's of use at the moment administratively. It's better not to fire him. Now, that doesn't mean that they can force him, for example, against his Fifth Amendment rights of self-incrimination, but you still have some power over him as an employee of the Department of Justice. So what I see taking place here, to wrap this up, is we are looking at kind of the one play in the fourth quarter of this. Very interesting and a very important play. If this was a football game, we're in the fourth quarter, and we're seeing now the final push by both sides. Actually, you're seeing some things happen by way of Donald Trump, but you're also seeing some desperate moves by Mueller. I mean, look at the desperation that Mueller's got. And Mueller is afraid. He is scared as hell, I believe, that he is not going to be able to protect the people he was assigned to protect because of the knowledge that's coming out. And because, quite frankly, Donald Trump has outthought him, outmaneuvered him, and he doesn't need to fire him. He's just outplaying him. And one last thing. Dan Bongino was mentioned about the people who still believe, and there are some people out there who believe that Mueller is some sort of a white hat in favor of Donald Trump and helping him. Well, no. And Bongino, who's been a federal prosecutor for 12 years, or a federal investigator, a federal agent for 12 years, that is, that's not how things are done. For example, you don't charge someone and then make a deal. You threaten them with charges instead of going down that road. It's not done though. Mueller did not have to file the charges he filed, unless he was intending on making examples of and shutting these people down. So, in protecting the FBI and Department of Justice. The whole theory of Mueller being like on the side of President Donald Trump and working to take down Hillary and those people, it just doesn't play well. It will not age well when it's all said and done. Mueller was put in there for one purpose only, and that is very simply to cover the butts of the Department of Justice and the FBI and the workers that are in the top level. That's the bottom line, and that's what he's doing. And right now he's afraid because the information is coming out about the exculpatory evidence. Grassley, by the way, Nunes, Nunes is actually pushing for the unredacted FISA warrant number 4. All right. Just so you know that. That, I think, is going to hold the key, the unredacted warrant application, the last one. And what we'll see from that, and by the way, the media already has that, as I mentioned, but I think once it's officially released, you're going to see the intricacies, the lies, the structure of lies that resulted in the creation of the special counsel itself. That's why everyone is fighting against this, and Nunes knows. He knows what's in there. Nunes has got the clearances, and he's read that FISA warrant application, so he knows what's in there. Releasing that would go a long way into just putting to bed this Russian narrative. And in fact, it might even expedite the, what would you call it, the prosecution or the beginning of the prosecution against people such as Orr, Steele, Brennan, or to keep it in the government, Orr, Yates, Brennan, Comey, or government related at one time or another. So that's what's going on. Watch this carefully. Watch for more security clearances to be revoked, as I mentioned, including Sally Yates, including Comey, Clapper. They're coming. It's coming. But the timing is critical. So a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes. And I want to make sure that everyone knew that. But the last thing really, just keep in mind, we're very close to really explaining how Obama, this lies at the feet of Obama. Obama was part and parcel to this. He facilitated this, in my view, along with Valerie Jarrett and others. Because remember, the trail gets very, very thin, or very, I should say, very close when you're talking about Sally Yates. Sally Yates, who signed off one of the FISA warrants. Yates reported directly to the Obama White House, and Yates, of course, was, Bruce Orr reported to Sally Yates, and that also goes into the Flynn charges, the charges against Flynn, the 1001 charges against Flynn, USC, 18 USC 1001, lying to investigators. So you've got this direct tie coming out now, and I believe we'll see this with the upcoming IG report, as well as the unredacted version of the fourth FISA warrant application, that is going to prove, I think, or be the catalyst to prove Barack Hussein Obama's involvement in this whole mess. And that's why, and I think that's why we're seeing this big backlash by the media. The media is complicit as well, because the media has the unredacted FISA, number four FISA application. Why won't they release it? Very simple. It's damaging to their narrative. And this, again, this is also why Papadopoulos' team wants that evidence, and Mueller says you can't have the evidence because it relates to ongoing investigations, which is why Rachel Maddow, for one, She's reading this so improperly, it's just beyond any comprehension. And she continues to, through her lack of understanding, continues to push this false Russian narrative. So this is all coming down in upon itself. And I'm telling you right now, we are going to see some things, some very interesting things between now and the midterm elections. And this does, in part, has something to do with the censorship. Now, excuse me, I'm not saying Alex Jones, for example, but I'm saying the censorship of conservatives. You begin talking about this or writing about this, whether it's on Twitter or others, you will be shadow banned. You will lose followers. By the way, in the last 48 hours, we've lost a couple of thousand followers on Twitter. Just like that. They can't, look, you start talking about issues like Spygate, Pettigate, well, all of the hot button issues. They cannot afford to let this information out. Goodness knows that the mainstream media is not talking about any of this, is not giving any of this attention. So you can overlap all of this into the censorship issue, because the censorship is not about us. It's about the message. It's about the information. It's about circumventing the usual controlling of the narrative. That's what this is all about. It all connects. Folks, thanks for putting up with me this morning in my whatever, sounding stuff, but I hope this made sense to you. Hey, if you like the program, tell others about it. Hashtag DHRS, Doug Hagmann Radio Show. Spread it along social media. Until later, God bless each and every one of you.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.